Train Talk Radio, episode number one.
Live from the La Mesa Model Railroad Club, it's Train Talk Radio. I'm your host, Jared Black. Join me and my co-host, Austin McAdams, as we discuss in-depth topics related to HO scale trains and the prototypes.
Hello, everyone, and what I said over the announcement was true. We are here at the La Mesa Model Railroad Club. It's a famous model railroad club, and it's located in the San Diego Model Railroad Museum. So if you hear children screaming or sound decoders roaring from locomotives or switch machines whining away, that's because we are actually sitting at the Yardmaster desk here at Bakersfield on the HO scale layout. And we're sitting right in front of Kern Junction for those of you who are familiar with Tehachapi. And I'm here with my co-host, Austin.
Hello there.
And since this is our first podcast, we just kind of want to go over the history of the club that we are broadcasting to you live from. This club was started in 1960 by a group of high school students because they could not get into other San Diego area clubs, which is one of the clubs we are looking at right across the hall from where we are recording, the San Diego Model Railroad Club, which is now the San Diego Model Railroad Association. I don't know what they call themselves now. but what do you have to say about that, Austin?
Well, it's a neat club. You know, I think our past is much better than theirs because there's more variety. I think, you know, it's back then, you know, they didn't allow teenagers. Of course, they do now.
Yeah.
And which is why they had to move to La Mesa, you know, make their own club. And then in 1981, 82, they were kicked out of Nebo Hall because the city wanted it back.
Mm-hmm. This is in La Mesa, California, mm-hmm. for those of you who are not familiar with the San Diego area. And I guess later on, I think, when was it? The late 80s, they petitioned the city?
82,
early 80s. They petitioned the city for the space here when they were rebuilding the building here. And the two clubs got together and formed the San Diego Model Railroad Museum, which is what thousands of visitors come and visit, you know, every month, right here in Balboa Park, which is the main attraction, or one of the main attractions, I should say, in San Diego. We have the zoo here, the world-famous San Diego Zoo. We have the Air and Space Museum. We have other museums, the Natural History Museum, and this is part of it, the San Diego Model Railroad Museum. But getting back on the topic of clubs, we are here at the La Mesa Club, as I said before, but our club kind of focuses more on actually running the layout, the HO scale layout, like a real railroad, not just running it for the hell of it, the fun of it, you know, but actually running it like a real railroad. And that's what we do. They actually are modeling 1952, to be exact. They're almost to 53 in the operating sessions. What they do is each time they have an operating session, it is the next day than the previous operating session. So it's a very, very slow calendar. Yeah, it's a very slow calendar year. I think they started back in November when they first started. Now they're in December, and they probably will go into 1953. But getting back to the topic, we're more on the modern side of things here. Isn't that right, Austin?
That's correct.
And one of our favorite railroads is probably the topic of today's podcast, which is the BNSF Railway, which is now what it's called, not Burlington Northern Santa Fe, which was the previous official name for the company, and particularly with their latest locomotives, which is what we like to run in HO scale. Austin likes to run Union Pacific 50% of the time, and I'm not really into that, but I don't particularly like the EMD, the newer EMD diesel locomotives. So the newest locomotive that is out on the market for GE, it being the Gevo line of locomotives, which includes the ES-44DC, ES-44AC, ES-44C4, and the other one,
ES-44AH,
which is a weighted version of the, what is it, the AC? Or
AC, yeah.
AC, yeah. And we have come to the conclusion with the different manufacturers in HO scale, these locomotives, there's Intermountain, Athern Genesis, MTH, Overland models.
Which is brass.
Which is brass. So I don't think any of us can afford that. I mean, what I have to say about brass locomotives in general is they're great and all, they're brass, they're expensive, but they're hard to come by at good prices. They're hard to come by in good condition at good prices.
Right.
And they're kind of hard to work with, mm-hmm. especially when you get these ones that need replacement parts. These dealers are, you know, small that are these manufacturers are small that make these. Our friend Francis is over there. He says he's the only one running right now on the layout. He's kind of upset with us because we're not out there running trains and the public is coming into the museum and they're only seeing one train, which consists of three Santa Fe 484s from Broadway Limited.
With the famous 3751.
Yes, it's a DPU for those of you who know.
Well, technically it's not.
Yeah, I'm making a joke. I'm making a joke. for those of you, should I mention his name on the air? Extreme Padre fan, now Harbor Yard Productions. He has something to say about. In one of his videos, he's arguing with his friend there about whether or not it's a manned helper. 3751. Of course, a steam engine is a manned helper. They cannot run MU cables all the way back to a steam locomotive or a radio signal, you know, to stoke the fire.
Right. Well, you know, it wasn't DPUs until like 2001.
Yeah, I'm just making a joke here. I mean, there are some members here who like to run trains for the fun, not just for the prototypical accuracy.
Right.
But back on the topic of BNSF diesel locomotives, we have found that the Intermountain is a bit superior to the Athern Genesis in certain areas, and those not necessarily being the detail, but we're all familiar with how Athern and Athern Genesis is pretty much the only big name manufacturer who has yet to start putting LEDs in their locomotive headlights and ditch lights. And that's a big turndown to a lot of people. I mean, what is the argument that bulbs are more realistic?
The grain of wheat bulbs? Yeah, but you run it like four times and they burn out.
Yeah, and they're not very bright.
No.
They burn out. Whenever you try and take the locomotive shell off, you probably pull them out of the sockets. Whereas, you know, Kato and a lot of other manufacturers have come up smart, making the LEDs part of the body, not the frame, not the shell. Mm-hmm. So when you take them off, there's no wires in the way.
Well, that's the beauty of the Intermountain because, you know, they're using mm-hmm. light tubes.
Yeah.
And you can just pull the shell off and run any wires.
Now, the downside to light tubes, they're great and everything, but you don't want to get too far back, if you know what I mean. You
exactly.
don't want the bulb to be sitting an inch and a half from where the actual output is. It's just not bright enough. I experienced this with a new locomotive I recently bought, which was a Kato BNSF-9. It was the older version. So they had not improved any of the aspects where they had LEDs, but they were orange. And as to quote Austin, they looked like a pumpkin on Halloween, a jack-o'-lantern. It was ridiculous, and they were not bright at all, and part of the reason is because they put these light tubes, you know, 2 inches from the actual output of where the light is, and it's no better, probably worse, than the brightness of a grain of wheat light bulb. Mm-hmm. So what I had to do was cut those back and, you know, bring the lights further up. I still have to do the rear headlight, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. It's,
mm-hmm. But... Of course, I replaced the LEDs with better yellow ones, which actually are the color that headlights are in the real world. But there's a few other manufacturers, not to diss Athern Genesis. They're great and everything, but they're a little bit cocky, I have to say. You know, they put their products way too high up on a velvet pillow, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
They're just... they're just now kind of getting up to the high detail that some of the other manufacturers have already expressed. Yes, they've surpassed them in some ways, but they shouldn't really take all the credit for this Jivo release.
Mm-hmm.
Because in fact they did buy the molds from what
Tower 55,
which was it was the previous main HO scale Jivo supplier in plastic at least.
Mm-hmm.
Theirs were good, but you have one Tower 55,
used
right?
To, yeah, I traded it away to.
And you had trouble with the
Worm gears. It was the biggest problem with engines. Mm-hmm. They just could not withstand pressure, and because of the past, you know how we use, they would crack a lot of times.
Yeah. So, I mean, see, that's where it's the quality of the actual model detail wise versus the actual performance of the model when you're operating it. I don't know which is more important. Would you say the actual detail of a model versus the actual the drive?
I'd always prefer a drive because you can always mm-hmm. upgrade the detail. Yeah. You know, the mechanical drive is, you can't do too much to it if it's already crap.
Well, I mean, there's some cases where you can completely replace it with third party manufacturers and have a great running locomotive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly the route many of the more advanced modelers have gone with their locomotives.
Well, you know, a fellow friend of ours, Travis, took an RTR-9, put in Genesis motor, and it runs fine now.
I have a Genesis. I have a Genesis GP7. This is not a modern locomotive at all. It's one of the first, in fact, commercially available diesel locomotives on the market back in the 40s, the late 40s, I believe, the early 50s. And I have to say that I'm not too impressed with the Genesis motor on that one. Mm-hmm. And it's not very much better than the Athern Ready to Run, which is kind of a hit and miss when you buy these locomotives because you might have one that sounds like a bee's hive.
Right.
When it runs, or it's jerky, or, you know, it sounds like a wasp's nest. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of the perks to buying Athern. I mean, they're good starting locomotives for a detail project. They offer a wide range at a fair price, you know, these locomotives, but they really need to be remotored and re-detailed.
Yeah, well, I think the Intermountain probably has one of the best motors out there.
Mm-hmm.
Cato, it's kind of they have good motors. They seem to pull well.
Mm-hmm.
But every now and then, if they're not happy with the other engines, they will make a beehive sound.
They will.
Unfortunately.
The Cato motors, I've had two F40 PHs from Cato, which are some newer locomotives that they've at least produced. And I was pretty impressed with the drives on those. They pull quite well. They have quiet motors, smooth acceleration, and I don't even think that's a part of the programming. That's just how they work.
Right.
Whereas, you know, with Athern or some of these other, you know, manufacturers, you might have something that really needs to be tweaked, you know, to get it to run smooth, you know, on the DCC wise. But, of course you want a smooth running motor to start with.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to some of the other manufacturers. We have MTH,
Broadway Limited,
produces a Jivo,
right?
And what do you have to say about those? I've never experienced anything.
I've seen
them.
A couple. I used to have an Ace. Actually, I had two of them. I feel like there's still the DCS technology, which is, you know, what 3-rowers use, and I feel like almost they're trying to extend their market range, but they didn't really do a good mm-hmm. job on it.
I mean, I've looked at right now they're coming out with actually a Dash 9 in HO scale. And I've looked at the pre-production models, and I don't see where people are really upset with these locomotives, you know, their performance-wise.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, they modeled the Santa Fe unit, which everybody has done.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not really a good market. Like if they made the Dash 9 the frontal cab or an NS Dash 9, I think they would have. It would have been a big upset for other companies, and it could have been a good increase for them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would agree with you because, you know, Cato, if you know their original Dash 9 they came out with, they only modeled one version but put different paint schemes on it.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
So did Athern.
They have until I bought it, I didn't even know these locomotives existed. The very first Santa Fe Dash 9s had this weird blocky looking truck to it. with this big bulge on it, and that's what they model on the Kato ones, the older ones. Whereas most Dash 9s today have the same side truck frame as the Jivos.
That's correct, yeah.
And I don't see, I mean, now their new Dash 9, which I don't know if they're even producing anymore. I mean, it's okay.
Yeah. Well, they've made SP and UP versions,
mm-hmm.
which have the actual high ditch lights above the deck, but I have not seen a new, run of that in BNSF and other versions. Yeah.
And if you look at, like, particularly like the Heritage 2 paint scheme they put on them, it doesn't look quite, the way it should, if you know what I mean. The Atherin, I think, surpasses them on right. that with their ready-to-run model. They get the paint scheme right. They get the decals, the right size and everything, the road number. Atherin, it's the same thing. You got metal grab irons on their ready-to-run equipment, which is a big upside.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of one of their claim to fame, because you get these Kato units, you get the plastic oversized grab irons that you have to install yourself. And the older versions, they drilled the holes smaller than the actual casting. So it's like ridiculous. You can't even use them unless you drill out the holes more, which I don't know if you'd want to do that. But the newer ones, they're the right size and you can get them in the holes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a downside to some of these Kato units. But, we'll see how these manufacturers come to, refine their models in the coming years here.
Hmm.
I think Atherin is... Are they going to do another release of the Jivos?
Yeah, they have a new release. It's actually... They did the first one they did, which is the kind of early Jivos. And then they did the red sill version for UP, a couple of versions, and now they're actually back to yellow sill.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of important, because we've seen a lot of yellow sill, or not yellow sill, red sill rather, locomotives from these manufacturers.
In the past, yes.
Yeah, and the yellow sill, when did they, that was like...
2008, yeah, 2008.
And now that we're moving into the second decade, well, we're well into the second decade of the 21st century, more modelers are actually modeling present day, and here we try to, for the modern part at least, we try to model, 2012, which is only 2 years ago or 3 years ago, depending on when you're actually listening to this. But that's important to have a lot of yellow seal stuff, because there's very, very few red seals left.
Yeah, there actually is a lot on the old AC 4400s.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of Jivos, but they upgraded a lot of them because it's a federal law.
Yeah. To explain the yellow seal, why don't you explain the?
Well, the whole idea behind it is because they needed a reflective sill for nighttime and for safety reasons, and UP didn't want to just 1 foot sections of it, so they painted the entire thing yellow.
That's what a BNSF did. They just put little. Stripes,
right.
Like you'd see on a tractor trailer or mm-hmm. something like that.
Well, speaking of the upgrading and everything, I'm waiting on the new Intermountain Jivos to come out, which have been delayed about 2 years now, and they had the new PTC, which is another upgrade. In 2008, of a famous Chatsworth crash.
Yeah.
They had to upgrade a PTC, and a lot of modelers, are modeling that now. It's kind of the new thing to see out there.
Yeah, and those details, I think, should be offered on all these manufacturers. They should offer present day details at least on or versions of these locomotives. And let's move. Speaking of new releases, we should talk about the newest release of the Intermountain Jivos, which includes the Loke Sound 4.0.
That's right.
Which the previous versions they had offered the Tsunami decoder, which I'm not hitting on Tsunami. I'm kind of a Tsunami guy. I don't have any. Well, I do have some Loke Sound, but it's the older version. But Tsunami is great and everything, but when it comes to certain aspects of what you actually want to do with the decoder, I mean, if you're running down here, say at this big club, how much square footage is this place?
22,000. I don't know.
It's
a big,
big
place.
It's a big place. I think there's, if you're familiar with HO scale, which I assume you are, if you've listened this long. each mile is what, 60 feet something?
Yeah.
Scale. And I think there's like 37 scale miles of track here, which is actually kind of a far cry from the 70 actual miles between Bakersfield and Mojave.
But you have to figure, you know, when we ran out of space, we had to compromise, and it's about one half of
what
the
real
thing is.
But that is still a huge layout.
Oh, yeah. It takes about 2.5 hours from point A to point B.
We're not the only layout in this building. And there's, you know, there's the N scale, there's the toy train gallery, there's the O scale, there's another HO scale layout, and there's a library and other rooms and such. And the public comes in here, they're screaming kids, there's lots of sound decoders going at once from different clubs, and there's really, it's a big space, so there's not really anything for sound to bounce off of. So when you have, like, say, a tsunami decoder in Intermountain Gevo, particularly the Intermountain Gevo, you can't really hear, like, the horn or, you know, the prime movers kind of faded into the distance, even at when you set CV-128 all the way up.
Right.
You're still, and you can replace it with the Railmaster speaker. You can put, you know, whatever you want in it, and it's not going to help it. You can, I mean, a lot of people will try and balance the horn at its highest setting, 255, you know, with the prime mover and bring that down. So, you know, it's balanced, so you can actually hear the horn, but Tsunami just doesn't get it right with those aspects of their decoders.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be more volume for these, specifically at when you're running on these big layouts. I mean, it's fine at home, you know, turn the decoder down, actually, it's really loud.
Right.
But I figure they're aiming towards more towards the home model railroader. You know, but here, where it's a big space, we need to have, you know, the higher volume of sound, which is what Loke Sound offers.
Right, which is my favorite, as you might know. You know, it's more user-friendly, I'd say, as long as you have your own programmer.
Right.
Which is kind of the key.
That was the other thing I was going to say is Tsunami, the plus side, is it's more user-friendly than Loke Sound for the, you know, because you have to have a Loke Sound programmer to put custom sound files, or, you know, you have one, so you know.
Right. You know, with Tsunami, you can function map it with GMRI. With Loke Sound, you can't really do the full aspect of function mapping. You know, but the beauty of it, though, is with Tsunami, you kind of limited on what you can do, whereas with Loke Sound, I can put my headlight to wherever I want, or certain functions, and it's also, it's kind of designed more for, you know, customizable.
Yeah.
So you can change, you know, the motor, you can change dynamic braking sound. And as you mentioned, you know, you can only change the sounds of a programmer.
Yeah.
The new sounds, the 4.0, you can change any sound you want to. But
really?
You can also download the prime mover from the website. The select is kind of the Tsunami version. You download the one prime mover, you can't change any of the sounds customizable.
Right. But at least you can change the by downloading the a different prime mover, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is something that Tsunami does not offer. They offer the decoders with the prime mover. You got a few horns you can select from. I don't even think they give you a range of bells you can select from.
No.
They give you one bell and one prime mover, few horns, and then their settings for dynamic braking and whatever other sound effects they put on those things. But they only give you that option. They don't give you the option of, they don't give you the option to change it and customize and put your own recorded sounds on these decoders, which is a downside in that if, say, you locomotive dies or you drop it or you just don't want the decoder in it anymore and you want to put it in a different type of locomotive, you can't do that and have the right prototypical sound without buying a new decoder, which is something that Loke Sound actually offers. You can download the right prime mover or put your own prime mover on it if you can get access to the correct prime mover and record it, and then put that on the locomotive and install it in the actual locomotive, and you'll have the correct sounds. But I mean, it's still a big upside to Tsunami in that it's more user-friendly in that regard to the person who doesn't have a low programmer, or they just aren't very savvy with, downloading files and putting them on decoders.
Right.
Which is something you have experience with.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where it's not really a manual for it. You have to kind of figure it out. Fortunately, Intermountain, like you mentioned, is actually coming out with GVOs with the Loxone file.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of move over to Loxone. Athern is still Tsunami. A couple other companies have moved over to Loxone, but I think it's kind of a battle right now because Tsunami is trying to up their game. And then, of course, you have TCS now that has their WoW sound, which I have not really experienced with personally.
WoW sound?
I hear it's kind of an all right sound. All they have so far is Steam. But I hear, people would still prefer Loxone or Tsunami over it.
Yeah, I mean, I would prefer Loxone if I really had the time and money to convert. But if you hear the dynamic breaks, I wish we had a sample right here to let you listen to, but it surpasses Tsunami. The sound of a GVO going down a grade in dynamic is accurately captured with the Loke sound, not
especially
the Tsunami.
Especially for our railroad.
Yeah. We're modeling Tatchby Pass, which 50% of the time, the locomotives are in dynamic braking, which is a very distinctive and unique sound. We've kind of gone over our limit here, but I think that should wrap us up for this episode. But I just want to thank everyone for listening, and we're going to probably do this, I don't know, how often do you think we'll post
two times a month, maybe?
Maybe two times a month. But please subscribe to our podcast, and my YouTube channel is Southern Pacific 5339, and this episode, if you are listening to it, will be posted there in video form. It's not very interesting. You just get to see us talking into the mics. And Austin, your YouTube channel is?
Austin McAdams.
Yep, because Google Plus.
Actually, I did custom.
Oh, you did?
Changed it, yeah.
You custom changed it? I don't see the big deal is now everyone's changing their YouTube to their actual name.
It's just, I think it was, people always forget my YouTube name.
Mm-hmm.
And they ask me when I look at my videos. I think it's easier for friends to find it.
Yeah, so it's kind of more like a Facebook.
Right.
But, it's okay. But, as on that side note, I think we should end this episode. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.